All right, just a couple hours here left to go before we hand it over to the fans in the pro with Deuce and the Moose at 4 o'clock. After that, you're going to hear kickoff with Boomer and Valenti and the prep football roundup. No LSU football tomorrow. No Saints football on Sunday because we got that Monday night game coming up. Very excited about that. On the show so far today, we've been talking about your favorite books that you read as a child. The Pizza Hut Book It program is turning 40. There's some formative experiences for some of you Gen X and elder millennials, I'm sure. So we're asking, what's a book that made a really big impression on you as a kid? What's a book that really mattered to you when you were a young person? One that you still remember to this day, the way it made you feel when you read it, or the things that it made you think about that maybe you hadn't thought about before? So you can let me know about those books. You can also let me know what book you would recommend for a young person today. And, you know, maybe you can kind of qualify it a little bit for us. Obviously, a 6-year-old is not going to be reading the same book as a 13-year-old, I don't think. It's not impossible. I was reading some books outside my age group when I was that age. You know, Hop on Pop and stuff. Anyway, give me a call, give me a text, tell me about your favorite childhood books. We also have been talking about New Orleans' nine most endangered sites. This outfit, the Louisiana Landmark Society, does this every year. They put together this list. And this year, they just rolled this out, maybe sometime last week. It's got the Topgolf development on there, the Lower Garden District, the Inner Harbor Navigational Canal locks, the slaughterhouse. I've gotten a couple texts about the slaughterhouse down there in the Lower Ninth Ward. Here's a text that says, my grandmother used to go to the slaughterhouse on Alabo and drink the blood from the cows. Talking about in the 60s. What? Your grandmother used to go to the slaughterhouse and drink the blood from the cows in the 60s? Why would she do that?
Maybe it's a hippie ritual or something like that? Closer to nature?
I know some hippies. They're not out here drinking cow blood.
Was she a part of a coven?
I'm not putting that on this texter. I don't mean to disparage their grandmother, but like that's why would you do that? You know, it's like drink unpasteurized milk. That's something that a hippie would do. I don't know any hippies that would drink.
I remember a lyric from a Bubba Sparks song where he said his daddy had took him hunting, and he said they shot the deer, and then the dad made him drink the blood to show that life is precious. That was a line, and I'm quite sure it was like symbolic, but you never know.
Bubba, we got to get Don Dubuque in here to tell us about that. Are people actually out here drinking the blood straight from the carcass of the animal that they just bagged? That seems untowards. Same texter said, Araby also had a slaughterhouse. We called it Cowtown. We bought fireworks there. Great times as a kid in Lower Ninth. Yeah, it sounds like a good time. I don't know that I would come over for grandma's dinner, but, you know, there it is. Texter said, hey, how about Fort Macomb in St. Bernard? Built in the early 19th century, it was garrisoned by first Confederate and then later Union troops. It's fenced off on land owned by an oil company, and it's just falling apart. Here's part of why Fort Macomb is so historic and important. The 1st Louisiana Native Guard, one of the first all-black regiments to fight in the Union Army, performed guard duty at Fort Macomb during the American Civil War. The 1st Louisiana Native Guard was comprised of self-emancipated men and free men of color. Kick ass. Love to hear that. About the chicken Big Mac we were talking about a minute ago, here's a text that says, hey, I think it was Colbert that said the chicken Big Mac is just like the regular Big Mac. There's no beef. I wouldn't trust a chicken sandwich from Mickey D's, but I'm sure the special sauce make it taste good. I saw a commercial for the new Sonic Double Smash Burger that looks pretty good. I prefer to cook my own food. No artificial flavors or colors or preservatives. You are what you eat. Yeah, that's true. Hey, man, there's certainly you can go too hard. You can go too far eating too much fast food, but hey, it tastes good.
Yeah, I guess if the mantra is true that you are what you eat, I think I'm more hops and barley.
Wait, say that again?
Hops and barley. If you are what you eat, yeah.
Oh, you're hops and barley then, huh?
Yeah.
And some water. Okay, I'm getting a lot of text messages, I think, about the blood drinking thing. Okay, somebody says you always drink the blood of the first deer you bag. I did not know that. Here's a text that says, that's from the movie Red Dawn. I haven't seen Red Dawn since I was probably 7 years old, so I can't quite recall if there's that in there or not. Watership Down. Oh, maybe these. Okay, I think some of these people are talking about their favorite childhood books. Okay, glad we got that cleaned up. Let's see. I had another Big Mac text I wanted to read. Where did it go? Hey, Ian and Coleman, shouldn't Mickey D's call it the Bok Bok instead of the Big Mac? I guess because it's a chicken. Well, sure, we can do that. All right, let's see what else did I have over here. Hey, Fat Bear Week is returning. We talked about this a little bit last year. Everyone was all excited about watching the bears in that national park in Alaska. You can watch the live stream of the bears rolling around. Well, this is from WWL.com. Fat Bear Week returns. Meet the bears that you can vote on. Article reads, don't let election fatigue get you down. Make sure your voice is heard during the very important ballot process for Fat Bear Week, an annual celebration of success that pits 12 bears against each other and lets you decide which one is the absolute unit as they prepare for hibernation and blow up in size. Voting was delayed this year when a bear killed one of this year's competitors. Bear number 469 attacked and killed bear 402 at the Brooks River in the Alaska Park. And because of the attack, their reveal was pushed back a day.
I think I see where they went wrong.
Who, the bears?
Yeah.
Why?
They called these bears by numbers instead of giving them cool, lovely names like Yogi or Cocaine Bear or something like that.
Why do these bears not have cool names, yeah, Coleman? You're absolutely right.
How are you supposed to vote? Unless they're just trying to keep the names of the bears secret because it was a horrible situation. You know how we do with juveniles here in New Orleans.
Yes. There's a privacy issue here. You don't want that bear's name getting out there. Certainly not before they've gone to trial. You know, maybe you can show a mugshot, but it's got to say, hey, you know, this person hasn't gone through the whole process yet. You know, presumed innocent until proven guilty. I hope that Bear 469 is also disqualified from competition, having murdered one of his opponents or her opponents.
I'm sorry. All I heard was 6'9". I was doing something else.
Coleman, let's do the news bomb. Kamala Harris and Joe Biden have been crisscrossing the Southeast this week to check on the recovery effort after Hurricane Helene ripped through and killed at least 219 people, a figure that officials say inevitably is going to increase.
Vice President Harris will head to North Carolina tomorrow as the state recovers from Hurricane Helene. Harris's visit comes after a stop in Georgia this week. President Biden was there yesterday after a trip to Florida and stops in both Carolinas. The Democratic administration says it's pushing hard to make sure all states affected by a storm that's killed more than 200 get what they need. GOP nominee Donald Trump is falsely saying the government's not doing enough to help those impacted in Republican areas, drawing an angry response from the president.
He is lying. Let me get this straight. He's lying.
And in Georgia yesterday,
our job is to help as many people as we can,
saying it's time to break down rabid partisanship. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
All right. I got a lot to say about this. Reading now from Politico. This is just earlier this week. Two former Trump White House officials say that the former president was flagrantly partisan at times in response to disasters and on at least three occasions hesitated to give disaster aid to areas he considered politically hostile. Or he ordered special treatment for pro-Trump states. Mark Harvey was Trump's senior director for resilience policy on the National Security Council. He told Politico, Trump initially refused to approve disaster aid for California after deadly wildfires in 2018 because of the state's Democratic leanings. But Harvey said that Trump changed his mind after Harvey pulled voting results to show him that heavily damaged Orange County had more Trump supporters than the entire state of Iowa. Harvey said, we went as far as looking up how many votes Trump got in those impacted areas to show him these are people who voted for him. The exchange was not previously reported, but it drew a dumbfounded response on social media from Biden, who summed up Trump's attitude as, "You can't only help those in need if they voted for you. It's the most basic part of being president, and this guy knows nothing about it," Biden said. Trump wants to withhold disaster aid for counties in California he views as insufficiently Republican. Nice. Nice. That's not all. You may remember during the COVID-19 pandemic, Trump was also accused of playing favorites along partisan lines as Republican-led states received preferential treatment when it came to federal aid. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who is a leading part of the COVID-19 response for God knows what reason, he was criticized for repeatedly favoring requests from Trump's political allies in red states. That raised concerns that states with Democratic leadership, like New York and Washington, were not receiving the same level of support as Republican-led states like Florida and Texas. President Trump did nothing to dispel that notion. He made several public comments suggesting that states whose governors were critical of him or his administration might not receive as much assistance during the COVID-19 pandemic. Reading now from CNBC.com in March of 2020, President Donald Trump said that he instructed Vice President Mike Pence not to reach out to governors who weren't, quote unquote, appreciative of his administration's efforts to slow the spread of COVID in their states. The president specifically mentioned Washington Governor Jay Inslee and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, both Democrats who had been critical of the White House. Donald Trump told Pence, "Don't call the governor of Washington. You're wasting your time with him. Don't call that woman in Michigan. It doesn't make any difference what happens." I'm old enough to remember this. I hope you are too. Donald Trump explicitly told Democratic blue states that they better kiss the ring if they wanted PPE and medical equipment like ventilators and the like to save their own citizens. But he's on the campaign trail this week saying that Biden and Harris are not helping out Florida, Georgia, North Carolina because they're too Republican. Every accusation is an admission. Why don't you sit this one out, Donald? In other news, we now know what it looks like when one of the most conservative members of Congress gets voted off the island for crossing Donald Trump and then goes to campaign with his Democratic opponent.
One of Donald Trump's fiercest Republican critics, former Representative Liz Cheney, appeared with Democrat Kamala Harris at a rally in swing state Wisconsin.
I tell you, I have never voted for a Democrat. But this year, I am proudly casting my vote for Vice President Kamala Harris.
Cheney was the top Republican on the House committee that investigated the January 6, 2021 insurrection, which Cheney says makes Trump unfit to return to the White House.
In this election, putting patriotism ahead of partisanship is not an aspiration. It is our duty.
Cheney charged that Trump running mate J.D. Vance should not be elected for saying he would have rejected 2020 electoral votes.
That is tyranny, and that is disqualifying.
Cheney appeared with Harris at a historic white schoolhouse in Ripon, Wisconsin, where a series of meetings held in 1854 to oppose slavery's expansion led to the birth of the Republican Party. I'm Norman Hall.
Now, I know a lot of people are blowing this off because they view Cheney as being a rhino, a Republican in name only. But let's go back and look at the record. When she was in Congress, Cheney was a strongly, consistently conservative member of Congress during her time in Washington, consistently holding traditional conservative positions on all the issues. Everything from national defense, small government, lower taxes, abortion, guns. She was the third highest ranking Republican in the House. She was the chair of the House Republican Conference until she was removed from that position in 2021 due to her criticism of Donald Trump. Maybe we need a new acronym because RINO Like, I understand what that means, I think, in the broad sense. People say that Rhino is a Republican who's insufficiently conservative. Somebody maybe like Mitt Romney or Jeff Flake. You know, one of these like sort of super centrist, middle of the road, milk toast guys. I understand why they get called a rhino. I don't know how you call Cheney a rhino. She never equivocated on national defense or small government or lower taxes or guns or abortion. She's hardcore, man. She's no rhino. The only thing that she didn't do was bend the knee to Donald Trump. And that's how you get called a Republican in name only. Now, if Kamala Harris wins, I don't think it's impossible that Liz Cheney finds herself working in the cabinet somewhere. Or maybe she gets a, you know, ambassadorship to someplace. But I think it's really just as likely she's going to end up on MSNBC, along with the rest of the politically homeless, never Trump Republicans. Hey, here's a bit of good news. You already heard about this yesterday afternoon. The dock workers strike, it's over for now.
The union representing 45,000 striking U.S. dock workers across the country has reportedly reached a deal to suspend their strike until January 15th to provide time to negotiate a new six-year contract. The union, the International Longshoremen's Association, is to resume working immediately, at least until January, according to a source who spoke on condition of anonymity because the agreement has not yet been signed, with both sides reaching a potential agreement on wage increases. The strike came at the peak of the holiday shopping season at 36 ports that handle about half of the cargo from ships coming into and out of the United States. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
I cannot read about this strike or think about it or listen to news about it without thinking about Frank Sabatka. And if you don't know who Frank Sabatka is, that's okay. He's one of the main characters from The Wire, that HBO TV show. Same guys that made Treme. Before they made Treme, they made The Wire, which was set in Baltimore. And in season two, they had a whole storyline around, you know, Frank Sabatka, who was one of the main labor leaders at the dock there in Baltimore. And he gave this very famous quote, which I think about all the time, and I've been thinking about it this week while this strike is happening. Frank Sabatka said, "You know what the trouble is, Brucey? We used to make stuff in this country, build stuff. Now, we just put our hand in the next guy's pocket." Even more good news, as a sort of jaw-dropping jobs report shows that the U.S. economy continues to roar into high gear.
Last month's jobs report is suggesting that even with higher interest rates, companies are still willing to hire. Last month's gain, 254,000 jobs, was far more than what analysts had been expecting. Sam Stovall with CFRA Research.
Stronger than anticipated. We were looking for 150,000 new jobs.
What does that mean for the economy and for the Fed?
Anybody worried about recession, I think, was offered the opportunity to breathe a sigh of relief.
The Labor Department also revised upward its estimate of job growth for July and August. Unemployment dipped to 4.1%. Will these latest job numbers make a difference in next month's election?
I think that would be a positive for a re-election of the current administration.
I'm Jackie Quinn.
Now listen, most people don't feel this. And there's all kind of think pieces and white papers and podcasts and cable TV segments dedicated to why Americans don't think that the economy is strong. And I think I get it. Stuff is still too expensive. People don't care about GDP or the unemployment rate or wage growth or anything like that if their groceries are too expensive. Things that, you know, cost $5 5 years ago now cost $10 all the way up and down. Bread, milk, bacon, eggs, beef, you name it. Groceries are too expensive. Housing is too expensive. Insurance is too expensive. But we've got to keep that all in context. Doesn't make it any easier on our wallet, but I think that we are a big, bold, brave, smart enough society to also know. Reading now from The Atlantic, America's economic growth rate is the envy of the world. From the end of 2019 to the end of 2023, United States GDP grew by 8.2%. That's nearly twice as fast as Canada's, three times as fast as the European Union's, and more than eight times as fast as the United Kingdom. It's hard to think of a time when the U.S. economy has diverged so fundamentally from its peers. Mark Zandi, the chief economist at Moody's Analytics, said, over the past year, some of the world's biggest economies, including those of Japan and Germany, have fallen into recession, complete with mass layoffs and angry street protests. In the United States, the post-pandemic recession never arrived. The economy just keeps growing. Hey, does anybody remember this? It was this day, October 4th, 1957, 67 years ago. The Soviets launched a satellite named Sputnik into space, the first time man had put anything into orbit. Radio Moscow reported on the dawn of the space age.
The first artificial Earth satellite in the world has now been created. This first satellite was today successfully launched in the USSR.
Now, you gotta wonder if that beeping sound is really the best that they could do. I mean, I wonder if America had been first to put a satellite into space, they could make it play Elvis or something. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe that Iron Curtain would have fallen a little faster once the Soviets heard Hound Dog. If you want to react to anything you just heard, give me a call. Give me a text. The number is 504-260-1870. That is, of course, the Okunar Jewelers talking text line. I'm stacking up some texts. I see some folks on hold. I'm going to ask you for your patience. We'll get through one commercial break, and then we'll come right to you. Don't go anywhere. I'm Ian Hoke in for Scoot right here on WWL. On the Okunar Jewelers talking text line, here's a couple text messages. This one says, in regard to the cleanup from Hurricane Helene, this text says, FEMA has arrived. You must now wear hazmat suits to clean up mud. Really adds to productivity and recovery. I don't know. I hadn't seen that. I don't know very much about hazardous materials cleanup or FEMA's policies in terms of, you know, disaster recovery, but that makes sense to me that you would wear a hazmat suit to clean up mud after a big flood event. I mean, it's not just like a landslide or a mudslide where the mud just like came off the mountain and now it's in your yard. Yeah, you can probably clean up that with just a pair of shrimp boots. But if you've had floodwaters plow through an entire town and sweeps up God knows what, all the chemicals from people's garages and basements and gas stations and hospital clinics and God knows what else is in there. I would hope that the people whose job it is to go and scrape that mud off are wearing a hazmat suit. I was just thinking the other day of, you know, people in Katrina's floodwaters, especially down in St. Bernard, where a lot of that oil refining infrastructure is. There was some bad, bad juju in that water, man. It wasn't just dirty lake water. A lot of chemicals, a lot of heavy metals. And you do not want those things on your body if it's your job to clean them up. I don't think that's too controversial. Rick at the beach is listening today. He says, Trump people are not Republicans. They just don't have another place to party yet. The tip of a third party movement is starting again. There's dinos, Democrats in name only, too. The party elites in both camps have common cause against their own commoners. If I can't have a monarchy of dogs, I will settle for gridlock. Interesting stuff, Rick. Yeah, we'll see if there's always a sort of nascent third party happening. You know, if it's what's the little guy that ran for president a couple of years ago? He started the Forward Party or something else. I mean, there's always these sort of third party movements, the No Labels Party. But I don't know if any of these actual there's not going to be electoral success here, at least not for a little while. Here's a text that says there's a list online of Republican statesmen who voted against FEMA funding, including Marjorie Taylor Greene, who now says something to imply that Democrats changed the weather. I haven't read that article yet. Like, it's some sort of Democrat conspiracy. Yeah, Marjorie Taylor Greene says that Democrats created Hurricane Helene. They can control the weather. She dead ass said that on her Twitter account. It's not somebody like, you know, maybe misinterpreting something that she said. They can control the weather, she wrote. It's ridiculous for anyone to lie and say it can't be done. Okay, Marge, you just keep doing your thing. Here's a text message that says, "Hey, Ian, who cares what Trump did 4 years ago? We don't seem to care about or talk about what Harris believed in 4 years ago." Well, I take your broader point, but we do talk about what Harris believed in 4 years ago. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion. You know, it was the first question in the debate. You've changed your mind on all sorts of stuff. Why? You haven't changed your values, but, you know, you used to be against fracking. Now you're not. You had all sorts of, you know, sort of real left-wing policies in the primary in, you know, 2019 and 2020, and you ran away from those positions now that you're, you know, the Democratic nominee and it's just you and Trump and you don't have to run against, you know, Bernie Sanders. So we are talking about those things. We do care about them. But the reason I wanted to point out what Trump did 4 years ago, A, I don't think it's ever inappropriate for us to go back and actually remember what life was like in this country in 2020, in the opening, you know, 10 months of the pandemic. You know, everything from March to Inauguration Day of 2021. If you're one of those people that says, hey, I love Donald Trump's policies. I don't like the mean tweets and his personality sucks, but man, the policies were great. His COVID policies were not great, y'all. They were actually really destructive. And we have the benefit of hindsight of looking back and saying, oh, we had a lot of excess deaths in this country because of the way the federal government was mismanaged in response to that pandemic. And if we're talking about, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? I don't know how you can have that conversation without remembering how Donald Trump and his administration mismanaged the COVID pandemic. Everybody knows somebody that died. Everybody knows somebody that got sick or got long COVID. All the other terrible things that happened to us as a society and as individuals during that pandemic, some of that could have been alleviated by better leadership. God forbid we're in that situation again, but there it is. That's why I'm talking about it. I also had a conversation with somebody on the text line a little while ago about drinking blood after you shoot a deer. Somebody texted and said, yeah, every time you kill your first deer, you drink some of its blood. I had never heard of that before. Someone texted in and said, no. When you kill your first deer, they put blood on your face or where they can put it and they cut your pants leg off. No hunting club makes you drink the blood. That's a relief. Let's go to Gregory and Metairie on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line. I got room for more of your calls and texts, 504-260-1870. Gregory, what's on your mind?
Ian, come on, man. The Atlantic, really? Now, listen, I know you've never lived anywhere outside of Colorado or Louisiana, which is cool. I mean, I dig you. I've seen you in public places. We've had fun before, basically at Scoots 50th. But why would you quote these people? They're so biased. The Atlantic. I mean, Donald Trump may be a buffoon, but he's also, I don't think he's dangerous. But I do know somebody who is dangerous. Harris. Very dangerous. Okay. Her flip-flopping. At least Trump is steadfast in what he believes in. You know what? We don't have any choice. Well, I don't anyway. Not we. I'm talking because I can't vote for the other party. There's just no way. It's crazy. And something else. Hold on. Another thing, Ian. You mentioned... I love Green Day, too. Anyway, no, wait. Hold on. I wanted to say something else. No, okay. Mr. Armstrong is one of the best performers ever. Golly, what was it? See, I forgot my train of thought because you brought up so many things. Those monuments. You had the guy on the first hour, right, about New Orleans losing a lot of it. Well, you know, I grew up here, and I grew up in Lakeview, and my father knew a lot of people that lived in a lot of those places, like in the like in the Holy Cross neighborhood or even uptown where St. Mary's and St. Alphonse's churches are, and they're kind of crumbling, except most of them become old folks' homes. Well, the reason why all those neighborhoods deteriorated is because people left. It was called white flight.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, whether it be good or bad, a lot of white flight happened. Now, I know there's a lot of gentrification. I got to live in the Bywater for 2 years at one of my family's places, and that's the only reason I get to live there. And I love living in the Bywater and seeing a lot of people renovating these old structures, especially he mentioned the Opera House, the Marini Opera House, mm-hmm. Which is a beautiful place. I don't know if you've ever been there.
No, yeah, lots of times. I've done shows there.
I miss the Bywater so much, but I can see also what happened, too. And now the people that are rebuilding in there are people not even from New Orleans. You see, I don't know if that means anything, but there's like, I don't think they have the same spirit of how sacred, you know, this old city is, and they're just in there to make a buck.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Look, Gregory, I want to go back and just talk about the Atlantic a little bit with you, since you specifically mentioned that as something.
Because she's an idiot. Sorry.
Okay. Can we talk about the Atlantic real quick? And he's hung up. Okay, well, let me just say this. If you think that the Atlantic is like a liberal publication, you know, that's just not the case. It is true that there are liberals on the payroll there. You know, Adam Serwer, Ta-Nehisi Coates, some of these other people. It is also true there are conservatives on the payroll at the Atlantic, including most of the management structure. Names you might recognize: David Frum, David Brooks, some of the nation's leading intellectual conservative thought leaders. I think it's okay for me to quote an economist from The Atlantic for 1.5 sentences. The Atlantic may have liberals on it, but it doesn't consistently push a singular political agenda. I like The Atlantic because it's more issue-driven than ideology-driven on certain topics, such as the economy, military, free speech debates. It is more centrist and conservative than you might think. And it's not just partisan snipery. They do a lot of thoughtful, in-depth, long-form journalism that is essential for us to have that kind of journalism in this country. So anyway, in defense of the Atlantic, we'll step away here and come back with more of your calls and texts on the Oakland-Hart Jewelers Talking Text Line. 504-261-870. I see Larry and Robert on hold. I'm going to get to you guys as soon as we get back. Give me a call. Shoot me a text. Ian Hoken for Scoot. BRB. I remember this song, man. I remember this video. This still holds up so good. I love it. Turn it up, Coleman.
Yeah, that video always reminded me of how I walk out of a bar.
So I was like touching all the walls and like we're standing sideways. What a great hat, too. Remember that cool hat?
Oh, I love that hat.
What a cool guy. Well, no, wait, because the band's name is Jamiroquai, but that's not that guy's name. I found this out a little while ago.
I thought that it was his name. Like,
no, Jamiroquai is the band, but the guy, the singer that you see in the video, I don't think his name is Jamiroquai. I could be wrong. Let's squeeze in a phone call or two. Let's go to Robert on the North Shore. Good afternoon, Mr. Robert. You're on WWL.
I can't believe that you guys are going to bring up, you know, that Donald Trump mismanaged COVID. And then you look at with this goofball president that we've had for the last 4 years who's asleep at the wheel. I mean, what does he mismanage? I mean, we're on the brink of war everywhere in the world. He wants to give student loan forgiveness, which is an absolute unconstitutional, you know, thing. But the problem is like he is supposed to, you know, enforce the laws, not change them. And that's where I really, you know, gripe, you know, with Biden. I mean, you know, he's crazy. He's a crazy man.
Okay. So, yeah, Robert, we touched on a couple different things here. Let's go back in reverse order. You said the president is supposed to enforce the laws, not change them. So does that mean that no president has the right to advocate for policy decisions that they would like to see Congress take up?
No, they absolutely should. But in other words, like, you can't just change the laws on your own. You know, in other words, like, you know, we have the three branches. Who makes the rules? The Congress and the Senate. Who determines whether it's constitutional or not? That's the Supreme Court.
That's right.
And then you have the president who is supposed to enforce the law,
yeah.
not change it, not circumvent it, not, you know, and I mean, just think about some of the things this guy did, open borders, student loan forgiveness, not to mention giving Iran all of this money right when he got into office. He gave him billions of dollars or whatever it was. But I mean, and these hostile friends, then Afghanistan. That's another comedy. How can anybody believe that this yeah. guy's a great president?
Robert.
And then that yeah. other goofball that she picked. I mean, y'all crazy. This is crazy.
Hey,
stuff.
Man, you're not going to catch me defending the Afghanistan withdrawal. I don't. There's clear that there's more that could have been done there to make that a cleaner, more elegant, less destructive thing. It makes me sad to think about all the equipment left behind. I wish that we'd hung on to Bagram, you know. So if we agree about one thing, seems like there is some key mismanagement there. But about the student loans and stuff, are you talking about, like, you know, when a president is trying to change the law, is the executive orders that it sounds like you don't like, right? Where the executive says, oh, with the stroke of a pen, I'm going to make the change in this border policy, or I'm going to try and get student loan forgiveness. You think they shouldn't be doing that?
No, I think that they should have the power to do it when it's really critical to the nation.
Yeah.
But this is not a critical thing. I mean, the things that he's making these student, you know, these executive orders, they're not critical. You know, I mean, it's pandering, and that's the problem.
So,
do you think that they should do that? Do you believe in the student loan forgiveness program? Do you believe in stuff like that? Open borders? Do you believe in that?
Well, ask me one thing at a time, Robert. I don't believe in open borders. I'm for a strong border. I also don't believe that we have an open border. No one's ever really been able to explain to me what they think that means. But as far as student loans, you know, if I'm sitting down and I'm kind of putting on my thinking cap about it, I'm not thinking about the constitutional issues first. I'm thinking about, God, what happens if two or maybe three generations of people that still have tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars of student loan debt that they took on themselves. Yes, they are responsible for having signed that paper and taken that money. But those are predatory loans. Those are loans that they will never be able to pay off. And I'm not talking about, you know, people with, you know, liberal arts degrees like gender studies or, you know, whatever. But doctors, lawyers who are struggling under these mountains of debt. And if we think about bailing them out in the same way that we bailed out all the big banks after the Great Recession of 2008, because we did that, believe it or not, we came to their rescue big time. Not just the banks, the auto industry, all kind of different industries got their bailout for bad financial decisions they made. But what if we gave that same opportunity to just regular working class people? What are they? Can you imagine? They're going to go out and buy cars. They're going to go out and buy homes. They're going to buy boats. They're going to start families. They're going to buy air conditioners and washing machines. They're going to start new businesses. Again, I'm only thinking about the practical impact of that. We can have a different conversation about whether or not you think it's constitutional. The Supreme Court certainly doesn't seem to think so. But just use your imagination for a second and imagine what it looks like when tens of millions of Americans suddenly are able to do something else with their lives besides toil, struggling to pay off a debt that they will never pay off. Sounds almost utopian to me. But we'll have to have that conversation another day. I got to step away. Come back here. Julie, you're next. We'll take more of your phone calls and read more of your texts after we get caught up with the news with Chris Miller and get our first look at traffic with Joe Cardosi. I'm Ian Hoke sitting in for Scoot on WWL. I'll be right back after this. Jam. After we come back from the news, we will get to some of your text messages about books that you read as a child or as a young person that left a big mark on you. Books that you still remember to this day, how they made you feel, if they changed the way you think, the way you go through the world. We're going to talk about those books a little bit in the next hour. This is all because Pizza Hut's Book It program is turning 40 this year. So I thought we'd just take a minute to talk about our favorite childhood books. Got a bunch of those texts stacked up. If you're on hold, stay there. I'm also going to get to your calls as quickly as I possibly can. At 3:25, I have a new guest on the program, Professor Rosalind Cook. is an adjunct lecturer of political science in the political science department at Tulane University. Mayor LaToya Cantrell told the New Orleans City Council she had a track record of delivering results. So what are they? I'm curious to know what she thinks they are. I'll talk about that with Professor Cook. Only 465 days until the next mayor is sworn in, but hey, who's counting?
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, oh, oh. O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.